Hello and welcome to the British Equestrian Podcast. We are squeezing in one final episode for Female Health February because we still have not talked about pelvic health and pregnancy. I promised it at the start of the month. We are here to deliver. We're going to talk about this today. And to talk about this, I am joined by someone who's very, very passionate about this subject. You met her already in the introductory episode at the start of this campaign, but she is back. We are sat in a physio room at squad training. I've literally pinned her down, we've shut the door. And we are here to talk about, as I say, pelvic health and pregnancy. So without further ado, I am joined by Ros Cook, who is a senior multi-sport physiotherapist at the UK Sports Institute at Bisham Abbey. And she supports the equestrian athletes on our world-class programme. And previously has worked with the Lionesses, the England netball team, and a whole array of other top-level sports. Welcome, Ros.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
well, let's dive straight into this then. I've mentioned it several times in there. What is actually pelvic health and the pelvic floor?
Oh, brilliant. Such a good question. So pelvic health is now the term we tend to use to describe the group of healthcare that we deliver for women. So it used to be called women's health and we tend to refer to things like gynecology and obstetrics. But pelvic health actually applies to both men and women, but considers all the functions of our pelvis in relation to things like opening our bowels, going for a wee, and for women, most fundamentally, gynecological issues and obstetric issues. So that might be things like prolapse, fibroids, endometriosis, but also obstetrics, so delivering babies, and how your pelvic floor actions work after that. So pelvic health is really this big umbrella term that covers all of that, those areas. And probably the superstar of that area is our pelvic floor. It's an area that we might have a bit of awareness of, especially if you've had children or you've struggled with issues around continence or sexual function. So it might be an area that you have a little bit more awareness, or you remember a midwife saying to you once, do your pelvic floors, and you sat there and did some squeezes while someone reminded you, and then you sort of dusted that off and forgotten about it. And then it maybe come back into your consciousness when someone's asked you, you know, your child's asked you to jump on a trampoline, and you sort of jump on the trampoline and realise, maybe my pelvic floor is not as good as I thought it could be or should be at this stage of my, at the moment. So, the pelvic floor is a group of muscles that are closely related also to our hip muscles as well. So really important for us as equestrians and riders to be aware of them. And it runs from the front, from our pubis, all the way back to the sacrum. And it's a sling of muscles that work together. And when it works well, it keeps everything in and up where it should be. And when it's not working so well, we might experience things like leakage or dragging or heaviness or pain in that area as well. So it's a group of, within the muscles, within the pelvic floor, they have two functions. That is to sort of a slow hold, and then also the ability to contract really, really quickly to stop us from things like leaking wee or passing out or leaking gas or feces. So it's a pretty cool network of muscles that works there as well. So as you can hear, I'm quite passionate about it. I think it's an area that gets forgotten about, and normally because people are quite embarrassed to either talk about symptoms that they're having, or as practitioners, sometimes we don't necessarily ask the question as well.
And as you say, it's sort of, I'm guessing, like many parts of our body, it's one of those that is going to change over a lifetime as well. It's not always going to function in the same way in one part of your life as it is in another.
Definitely. So normally we associate pelvic floor dysfunction or issues to be something that happens once you've had children, or if you're menopausal, or if you're an older person, which really probably is a very narrow viewpoint of what pelvic floor function is like. We know that it definitely changes over our life, of course, and that's because in females our hormone levels change. We also know for some people that their menstrual cycle also affect their pelvic floor function. But we can also see pelvic floor issues in younger women and younger men, but younger women we're going to talk about here, and women who haven't necessarily had pregnancy or childbirth as well. So it's not an exclusive club to be in the pelvic floor dysfunction club. And some of the reasons that that can happen in people who have not not had children is that we know that as athletes, there are different stresses on the pelvic floor, and sometimes that can lead to levels of dysfunction, and things like not being able to control urine, not being able to control gas, sexual dysfunction, so pain on sexual activity as well. So those things can also happen with that. And we definitely know that the impact of something like relative energy deficiency is really significant on the pelvic floor. So relative energy deficiency in sport, RED S, you guys will have heard about that before. Lack of energy availability can influence our hormone access, and our pelvic floor loves hormones. It loves estrogen. So when that's being depleted, and that can happen with a lack of energy or in post-menopause, that's when our pelvic floor can also become dysfunctional as well.
And is it something that we, you know, do we see problems in these areas in equestrian sport particularly, or in a higher percentage? Because I guess it's, you know, you mentioned the importance of sort of the hip muscles and things like that. And, you know, you have to have sort of quite good function in that area joint wise.
Yeah.
Is that something we see in equestrian athletes? Problems in this area.
So the challenges for equestrian athletes, potentially we see, is because obviously the impact of the saddle can be quite significant on the pelvic floor. You know, the nature of riding as a sport, there's a lot of impact going through that tissue, either when you're just sitting into the saddle. So the shape of the saddle can we think may have an impact onto the pelvic floor. And there are some cases where people have sustained what we call a pudendal nerve injury, which is one of the nerves that supplies the pelvic floor from compression, or a saddle horn injury, where again there's been collision with the pelvic floor and the pelvis against the sort of the butt of the saddle. So that trauma can happen. We don't know exactly, because again, people don't ask the question, and I would say most athletes and riders are very good, and most women in general are just very good at getting on with it, because we sort of accept it as being normal when it's not necessarily normal. And I think we can be sometimes too accepting of that. So we're not seeing high report of those issues. But I wouldn't say riding alone is the biggest risk factor, but the nature of having that constant pressure through the pelvic floor for some people could be more of an issue than for others.
And what are some of the things that maybe then that you could do to support your pelvic floor and sort of give it the best chance of functioning as it should do?
Yeah, that's always a great question, because we're sort of like, okay, it's a problem, so what do I do about it? So there's some really, really simple things to think about when you're trying to manage your pelvic floor. So generally, if you've got pelvic floor dysfunction and that's leading to you having episodes of things like incontinence or leakage of urine, what most people tend to do is cut their fluids down, which isn't very helpful, because then our bladder learns to cope with smaller volumes of fluid and wants to empty more quickly. So making sure that you try and stay hydrated, but thinking about what drinks and things you're taking in. So caffeine can be quite irritable, so for the bladder, and therefore would make the bladder want to void and empty more often. So again, if you're having that sixth cup of tea, maybe think about substituting that for a glass of water, or try and match your caffeine intake with a glass of water each time around that. So that would be one easy thing we could all do, especially when it's winter and it's cold and we all want it's hot drinks. So fluid intake. When you do go to the toilet and you go into void or open your bowels, it's make sure you actually complete it. A lot of the time, I know we're all really busy because we're dashing from one thing to the next. What we tend to do is like, oh, I'll just dash for a wee, go as quickly as we can. And sometimes that incomplete emptying can be a problem, and can again set up these challenges for our pelvic floor and making the bladder very unhappy. And if you are getting persistent things like urinary tract infections as well, that again, the bladder's trying to empty a lot, the pelvic floor can be challenged with that. So managing your fluids, watching out for UTIs are two sort of really obvious things to think about as well. And when you do go to the toilet, make sure you empty fully. Take your time if you can. And again, especially when you're opening your bowels as well, that's a really important thing to do. Some people really struggle with opening their bowels, so using things like a small step or to support your feet so your knees are a little bit higher. Again, that makes it much easier for your pelvic floor to help empty your bowel. So that's something really simple that we could all do. And if you've got children, small children at home, there's normally a stool or something around in the bathroom, so you can just pop that under your feet. Really quick and easy thing that you can do. And then if you are having issues such as leakage of urine, leakage of feces, unable to control your gas, so like, you know, you can't, you know, you're maybe in company, you can't blame your fart on your horse, you know, if you're having those issues, or you're experiencing pain or discomfort on sexual activity, it's probably a really good indication to go and seek some further help. So seeing a pelvic health physiotherapist, we can access those on the NHS. You can also access them privately. You can speak to your GP about that. These practitioners are highly trained for assessing and treating these issues. And one of the main treatments that we would tend to be advised for a lot of people will be around pelvic floor muscle training. So there are some great tools out there to help you with that, because like all exercise programs, especially when the physio gives you them, you normally do them really religiously for like the first couple of weeks or until your symptoms improve, and then your symptoms are better, you're back to doing what you want and you stop doing them. What we know that with pelvic floor muscle training, if that you are sort of adhere to it and you keep going with it for a sort of a 3-month period, which I know sounds a long time, but 12 weeks, not that long in the grand scheme of things, what we tend to see is a really big improvement in people's symptoms and function. And what do we mean by that? Less episodes of leakage, maybe no leakage, less discomfort. I generally feel more confident and happy to do activity, which is what we want. So pelvic floor muscle training, you can use apps such as the Squeezy app, which is an NHS-backed app. It's available on all platforms. I think it comes with a very small cost, a nominal cost of about £2. But once you've got the app, that's it. And within the app, you can chart things like your fluid intake. So again, if that's something you're mapping. But it's also got a exercise training for you, teach you how to do your pelvic floor exercises, and then we'll give you reminders on your phone, which is really, really helpful. So mine still pings up now, and then I'm like, so when I see it come up on, it just says you'll do your exercises. It always triggers me to go, oh, I'll do a few now. And, you know, we all have our phones on us most of the time. You know, because we've always got stuff to do. So even if it just popped up, a reminder popped up and you even just did a bit, then would be fantastic. So the Squeezy app, I would definitely encourage people to use, and it's got some really good ways to feedback and help you. So yeah, I think those would be the sort of some of the first things to think about. And then from a riding perspective, obviously obvious things is saddle fit. You know, you might have bought this new amazing fantastic saddle which looks beautiful, and it's supposed to make you, you know, suddenly the best world-class dressage rider in the world. But if you're really uncomfortable in that, or it's causing a lot of pressure, or you're finding that actually some of your symptoms are worse, you might need to just consider that as well. It's not always an easy option for people to change tack and equipment, because you've got to consider the horse as well as you. But obviously we want that sort of good fit between all those three moving parts, I would say, the horse, the saddle and you, because otherwise someone's going to be uncomfortable and you're not going to be able to perform at your best. So I would definitely saddle fit for the horse, but also for you as the rider is also important.
Definitely. And, you know, it's something, again, I keep touching on it when we do these episodes, is it's so important. We as riders, we always put the horse first, and it's all about making sure that horse is comfortable and able to perform at their best. But we need to consider ourselves as well, whether you are a top level athlete or you just, you know, you ride at the weekends and that's what you do. It's a team of two here, and we have to make sure that we're able to do it to the best of our ability so we can enjoy it. That's why exactly. We do it.
Oh, definitely. And I think as riders, you know, you ask the question like, well, pelvic floor, yes, it's really important for just our function in daily life, but as a rider, how does it help our performance? Well, it's important, like we said, it's closely related to our hip muscles. It forms that sort of base of the bowl of the pelvis. So it helps us transfer forces from our spine to our limbs and our legs and up into our back, which is really, really critical in probably all disciplines of riding. If you're jumping, if you're, you know, you're doing cross country, if you're doing beautiful dressage tests, that, you know, that leg has to be in the right position and a beautiful posture. You know, all of those things are really fundamental to that connection through your pelvis and your leg and your trunk. It's also when, you know, if we know that if you've got good control and robustness in that area, you're going to cope with forces as well much more effectively. So things like jumping, especially big jumps in cross country, where those big impact forces come through, again, you're able to dissipate and cope with those. So there's a reason, a performance benefit as well as a life benefit of working on this area.
Definitely. And obviously the resources you mentioned there, the Squeezy app, and we'll put a link to that on the website. If you go to britishequestrian.org.uk, there's a page there dedicated to Female Health February with loads of resources on all the topics we've talked about this month. But we'll put that out there, and I'm sure Roz can come up with a couple of others as well that we can put out there, so that if this is an area you want to look into more closely, there is some stepping stones there to take you in the right direction. Now, one of the things we've kind of mentioned there in relation to your pelvic floor and that can cause significant changes in that area is pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And pregnancy is obviously also something that can have a significant impact on your riding, your time in the saddle as well. What are then some of those physiological changes then that pregnancy puts on the body? Before we even get into what happens in the saddle, what about the body in general?
So pregnancy, I would always describe as probably, pregnancy and childbirth is probably the toughest and most physiological demanding endurance event that you'll ever do as a female, I would say. So, and for people who have been pregnant and have delivered, I'm sure you would agree with that. It's a very consuming situation for everything. So there are a lot of physiological changes in the body during pregnancy, and it really varies by trimester, and that's related in part for the growth of the fetus and how they're developing and the needs of that. I suppose if we talk about it from a musculoskeletal point of view to start with, so obvious things that will happen will be the growth of the fetus at the front will mean that your back will start to arch more, so you might find that you have an increased arch in your lower back and your pelvis position will change. You will say your pelvis will start to widen in preparation for delivery at that stage as well. So you'll get quite a few changes around that. Some people may experience things such as pelvic girdle pain as well. And what we know about pelvic girdle pain, what we used to do is sort of reduce what people did, offload them, give them loads of support. Actually, what we know now, the best evidence out there is actually we need to keep people active and moving. And I would say for a lot of equestrians and riders, they're highly active all the time. There's no off days when you own horses. So, but what it does mean is probably managing and monitoring what you are doing in relation to yard work as well as being in the saddle, because we know that's very taxing on the body as well. You'll also get changes in terms of physiologically, in terms of things like your lung capacity and your circulating volume and sort of blood vessel changes. And again, that's all to support growth and development of the fetus. What we definitely see in the latter stages of pregnancy is compromised to things like your ability to deep breathe, obviously with baby sitting at the front, more pressure onto the bladder and onto the pelvic floor, which we've talked about a lot already. So there's quite a few changes. But what we need to do is also consider that those physiological changes are normal, they're there to help us. It doesn't mean that they're a barrier to doing exercise. And remaining active is really important during pregnancy. We know that women who are active and maintain that throughout are likely to have shorter, easier labours. Not for everyone. It's a very individual experience, and every pregnancy is different as well. So there's definitely where women have had multiple pregnancies and deliveries, and they've been very, very different experiences each time. So, but what we do know, the common trend is if you're more active, actually you cope with that physical challenge of labour as well more easily. So there's a real benefit of being active, and sometimes people can be a little bit apprehensive. That might be because they've unfortunately have gone through things like miscarriage or those things in the prior to pregnancy, or they've really struggled to get pregnant. So they can be quite fearful about activity. So there are assessment tools that are available now. And if you go to the Active Pregnancy Foundation, they have a tool there which will help assess someone's ability to exercise during pregnancy and some things to watch out for as you move through your pregnancy. There's also loads of resources there to guide you about being active during pregnancy. And like I said, I think for our cohort, trying to manage that level of activity is really important. And listening to your body and respecting your body is what we need to do. Like we said, everyone will always be out for their horses, sorting everything out. But sometimes you might just need to step back a little bit and listen to your body and what you can manage with at that time.
Definitely. And I think it's, you know, it's worth pointing out that, you know, we've said that everyone's pregnancy is different. And I think it's worth saying that everyone's pregnancy in relation to what they want to do in with their horses, whether that is to stop riding the moment you find out you're pregnant or to keep going for a little bit or, you know, quite a long way through.
Yeah.
Everyone is different and everyone's going to tackle that in a different way. And as long as you're taking the safety considerations into consideration and you're working around the limitations of what your body is now faced with, you know, everyone is entitled to do it the way that they feel is best for them.
Exactly.
And to just, you know, embrace the fact and say we're all going to take a different approach to it.
Yeah, I think obviously safety is such an important consideration, and you're, you know, you have an assessment of your suitability to ride throughout pregnancy, and that might be based on the stage of pregnancy you're in, changes in body mass, changes in your mobility, you know, how easy is it actually to get up and into the saddle. If you're experiencing pelvic girdle or low back pain, if you're having any pelvic floor dysfunction, what type of pregnancy you've got, if you're a high-risk pregnancy or a low-risk pregnancy, your confidence and competence of being a rider, and the suitability of your horse as well, and the type of work you want to work. Obviously, the key things are avoiding trauma, being kicked, you know, any trauma to your sort of round your tummy area is what we've got to avoid. And there are times when we can't control for everything. You know, horses can get spooked and they can be unpredictable. So it's trying to maintain that as much as possible is really important.
Definitely. And yeah, as you say, managing the risk alongside the benefits that you're going to get from being around horses. Because it is, you know, if that's what makes you happy and, you know, mentally in a good place, and obviously, I should say, the physical activity that comes along with that, as long as you're managing the risks, then great.
Yeah, we're in a good place.
So what about, you know, you've touched on that some of the bodily changes that people are going through. What are some of the considerations maybe we need to take if you are deciding to carry on riding into your pregnancy from certain length of time? What are some of the training considerations we need to take into account then?
So using, like I said, using the tool that we talked about a moment ago, so the Get Active tool is really important, because that will give you some guidance around what suitable level of exercise for you as pregnancy progresses. Now, a lot of us wear things like smartwatches now and things like that, so we can track a lot of our sort of variables, so heart rate and things like that. So those are the sorts of things to maybe consider if you're continuing to ride. So that will give you a way of monitoring how hard you're working on the horse, because your perception of how hard you work, or it's not maybe something you've not measured before, so what you think is quite easy normally might actually be quite a hard session to do. So using things like your heart rate to monitor that. Another good one is a really simple tool is like how out of breath you are as well. So if you're really struggling to sort of, you know, formulate sentences and talk when doing activity, that's probably quite a high level of exertion. So again, considering that. But it is going to be on an individual basis. It's your baseline of fitness, what type of work you're doing, and all of those need to be considered as well. But I would really steer everyone to have a look at the Get Active questionnaire, use that as a tool, and also work with your healthcare providers. So work with your midwife, your GP, to discuss what you want to do and what that looks like. Sometimes healthcare practitioners will go for the lowest risk option. When as soon as you say you're a rider, they're like, oh, just stop riding. That might not be feasible for you, but you might need to consider that if you are a high risk pregnancy or you're starting to have complications or issues.
Definitely. And your coach as well is an important part of that relationship, making sure that they're aware of what you're going through so they can tailor what you're doing.
Definitely.
As well. Well, we've talked a lot there about kind of pregnancy, and then, but, you know, obviously there's the other side of this epic endurance event that we're talking about. You've got through your pregnancy, you've got through your labour, you've got a baby, and now you want to get back in the saddle.
Yeah.
How is that going to work?
So I think within Equestrian, we've got a long history of highly successful returns to performance and competition by our female riders. And I think probably one of the sports that have shown that it can be done, and that's also a reflection of that we have riders that compete throughout their lifespan. So the challenge when returning for whatever sport you want to do or whatever event it is that there's always this comparison of how long it took someone to get back. There isn't a magic number.
Sadly.
Sadly. And again, it'll be influenced by, again, your pregnancy, your delivery, what happens in delivery, and then also how your body is responding following that as well. So, you know, if you've had a C-section, that might look very different to you getting, you know, your progress getting back into the saddle versus someone who's had a normal vaginal delivery without any complications. If you've had a really complex vaginal delivery and you've had some postpartum bleeding, that might slow you down more than someone's had a C-section. So it isn't like C-section, yeah, that's going to take long, this number of weeks, not vaginal delivery, this is going to take this number of weeks. So it is individual, which people always get really frustrated with, but it's the reality. And also, I think there is a pressure on women that, you know, got to bounce back, this horrible phrase of bounce back, lose the baby weight, you know. And what we actually need to consider, it took us sort of probably a good 9 months to grow this new human.
And that is clear. We've literally grown a human.
You've grown a human. So maybe it also gives yourself some space and time to, one, get used to your new roles and responsibilities and figure out how you, you know, want to work. Because, you know, babies don't come with manuals, unfortunately.
Damn.
But a lot of people come with opinion. So you've got a lot of things to navigate. You've got a lot of hormones working through. And if you've not got a time pressure, or you're not putting a time pressure on yourself because you've suddenly set a goal, I think it's about trying to consider where you're feeling and where your body's at. But there is a process to work through. So I was really lucky to co-author Return to Sport Guidelines for Postpartum for Female Athletes, and this was across sports. And we created a framework to try and help athletes, but also riders, and also support staff working with this cohort to try and help return. So what we split it down, so it's called the 6 hours, and what we did was sort of split it down to this sort of ready, which is pre-baby arriving, like let's prep you for what postpartum period might look like, what are some of the things you need to consider or do. We then move into review, which is sort of 0 to 3 weeks up to 6 weeks. So this is sort of that classic period of up to the 6 week check with the GP. And this is starting to really assess, you know, how your body's recovered from pregnancy and delivery. And looking at things like, can you activate your pelvic floor? Have you adapted things like a kit? So if you're breastfeeding, have you got a bra that's going to support you sufficiently for riding and enable you to breastfeed? Sounds really simple and obvious, but until you get to that point, it's maybe something you've not considered. And also in this review phase, it's consider things like nutrition intake. You know, if you are breastfeeding, that's an extra 800 calories a day that's going out the door. You need to make sure you're replacing that before starting to really just increase your activity levels. Also, we know sleep becomes very precious. Sleep's really important for our recovery as well, and that's going to be highly compromised. So those sorts of things, trying to work those out, is really important. We would then look at the next phase, which would be restore, which could be between 3 and 7 weeks or 6 to 10 weeks. Again, everyone's different. But at this time, we'd probably consider like low intensity riding activities, maybe avoid sort of the more challenging things such as jumping or cross-country schooling, where there's more impact forces, or you need your body to be able to cope with that unpredictable element. Like we said, we've got a horse to work with here. Yeah. They might be particularly fresh.
Particularly if you've had a period of time off.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Or they're just super enthusiastic. And also your body may not be back to where it needs to be to ride that horse to their best or to support the horse in what they need to do in their training. So I think it's really important that, again, this sort of restore period is around, yes, addressing those key areas such as your abdominals and your pelvic floor, but actually, where's your general fitness at? What's your general strength like? Are you back to a place that actually you can cope sufficiently without injuring yourself? Because that's what you don't want to do.
Definitely not.
And then we'd look at, again, reconditioning. So gradually, again, this is probably about 10 to 16 weeks. So looking at trying to increase maybe the number of horses that you're riding, or the duration that you're riding, or the level of intensity, making sure you've got some recovery time between your sessions. And you might, you know, before you had baby, you might have had a lot more time to do that. So it's how that's going to fit in your new normal and your new setup, and what other support you might need from your partner or family or childcare to enable you to do that. At this stage, we'd also, again, going back to saddles again, look at saddle fit. Your pelvis might have changed shape a little bit. Bodies do adapt and change after childbirth. So just consider that as well. And then return would be like your last phase. So getting back to, penultimate phase, returning back to competition. And again, maybe consider a phased approach with this. So do you have to do every show, or could you pick what class you wanted to do, or, you know, be selective and have clear goals in that space, work with your coach in that area, and also see what's going to be feasible with baby and the level of support. You know, is it feasible getting the lorry ready at 5 in the morning and driving for 4 hours and then competing? You know, what's going to work for you, and everyone's going to be different. And then finally is the refine phase, which is ultimately, we've got you back, you're back doing the thing you love, and you're really enjoying it, and it's going well. That's all best combination, best scenario. What things do you need around you to help keep you there? So is that childcare access? Is that, how are you going to maintain, now you're back riding and you haven't got so much time to do that work off the horse? Where's the give and take in that? What are you going to prioritise at different times of the year so that you can perform with your horse the best of your ability?
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, that is, at the end of the day, it's an entirely new landscape you have to navigate. It's not just a matter of, as you say, getting back on the horse. It's how all the different moving pieces around that picture come together and create this brand new jigsaw puzzle of what life is going to be from now on.
Exactly. And I think for elite athletes and elite riders, you know, it's a real challenge because of performance as well. You know, there's this expectation you've got to be able to perform. And that's, you know, it's a great drive for a lot of our athletes, but also we want to give people time and space to, you know, enjoy their new role as being a parent or a mum, or, you know, that's equally has a lot of value and importance as well. So it's a constant juggling act. And I think it's an area as we see more high profile riders and athletes take those steps, maybe at a different point to their career than they used to, and not seeing it as a barrier to returning. Hopefully we'll see, you know, more positive role models for others, that this isn't this doesn't mean that you're not going to perform. Actually, for a lot of people, it becomes their new superpower, and they go on to achieve even greater things.
Exactly, as some of our athletes have very ably proved in recent years.
Exactly, which is really exciting.
Definitely. And, you know, and as you say, that applies whether you're at the top level or, you know, recreational rider. We've all got our own goals, and we've all got things we want to achieve. And as you say, it's all about using what this sort of process you've gone through as a positive and taking it forward and using that, as you would say, as your superpower.
Yeah.
As we go forward. Well, as we kind of come to the end of this, well, it's actually been a very, very interesting chat, and hopefully everyone listening agrees with me there. What would be your kind of your take home message then for everyone who's listened?
I've got a soapbox. What I need to pick. Pelvic floor dysfunction is not just for people who have had children or postmenopausal, and it's not just about women. If you've got symptoms, try and be brave and engage with your local pelvic health services, with your GP, whatever medical support you can access to address it. It's not normal, and we can do things about it. So please try and engage with those processes. I think that's really important. If you're a rider who's gone through pregnancy and is looking to get back in the saddle, and again, it's been a bit more difficult than you thought it was going to be, your bounce back has not been your bounce back, again, reach out for support. Look at, there's so many different resources out there that you can access. But again, working with a pelvic health physiotherapist will be really helpful for you to try and understand and navigate this new body that you're working in and how that might help. And they can help you work that through so that you can perform well. And then finally is that probably if you do see pregnant riders and or riders that have gone through that journey, as a collective, we can be really supportive to new mums coming back into the riding environment. And that might be a comment of, you know, that positive, like, well done today, it's great to see you back out on your horse, you know. Trying to be inclusive for everyone is really important, and recognise that everyone's journey is different. Sometimes we all like to give our advice and, oh, when I had my baby, I did this, this and this. But recognise that everyone's individual. Bounce back is a phrase, it's not a thing. And this is a great opportunity to be an even better rider and work with your horse to perform at your best.
There we go, chaps. There is your positive message to end the day on. That was fascinating. Thank you so much, Roz. As I mentioned earlier, head to the website. There's a load of resources there. We'll also put some pregnancy ones on there as well, so that you can, you know, as you said, take what we've discussed today a little bit further and signpost you in the direction for other things. We're sort of coming to the end of Female Health February now, which is very sad. I've had a brilliant time doing this. I've learned so much. I hope everyone else has as well. It's been so interesting. If you've missed any of the content we've put out, it's all on the website. You can find the other podcast episodes wherever it is that you found this one. And make sure that you look into all of it, and it can hopefully inspire all of us to take a look at our bodies, appreciate the wonderful things that they can do, and all the actually mostly quite simple things that we can do to help them function at their very, very best. We will be back with more podcast episodes coming up. We've got plenty more exciting content to come on a range of different topics as we head throughout the rest of this year. So hopefully you will join us there. Make sure that you share everything on social media. Tell us how much you've enjoyed the campaign. We'd love to hear from you, and we hope that you will join us again very, very soon.